Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, you know, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your station, call John Quick at 317-432-0309. Available as a long-form talk show and in 60-second infomercials for even more revenue opportunity. Carol the Coach, truly refreshing radio, enriching the lives of your listeners.
Well, welcome to the Carol the Coach show. And let me tell you, I am en route to my office as we speak. My internet's down, my cable's down, and when I figured that out, I went to the office, and I'm just getting in because, you know me, I would never miss a show with you. So I started it on the telephone. And, you know, what I should have said about Russell, the truck driver, he says, why is it that I want what I want, and then when I get it, I can't have, I don't want it anymore? Well, you know what? Sexual addiction is like that. It really is, unfortunately. And I do mean this. For some people, they want affection. They want what they can't have. And when they get it, oh my gosh, they don't want it anymore. So it's not the sex. It's actually wanting what they can't have. And that can be very, very tough. You know, I am Carol the Coach, and I know that it can be difficult, you know, to absolutely know what it is that you want when you want recovery, but you don't know how to do it. And so I'm here to tell you that clearly you have to get into a good, solid recovery program. And the beautiful thing about that is I can help you get there. This show can help you get there. A certified sexual addictions counselor can help you get there. And this is how it works. What happens is that you listen to the show, you find out how to get to a CSAT. And I'll tell you right now, you go to sexhealth.com, you put in your zip code, and sure enough, the next thing we know, hey, it's all about finding somebody who has a specialty in this area. Wow, I can't say it enough. It is so important to go to a specialist so that you do not waste your time. Does that make sense? Well, I would hope so. And if you're like Rob, who we're going to be talking to on the show, he needed to go to an intensive. And the reason that he needed to go to an intensive is that he needed to catapult his recovery. And so sometimes just going to a therapist, getting involved in groups, isn't enough. Sometimes what you have to do is you have to go into treatment, inpatient treatment. And if you're not somebody who can devote 28 to 45 days to get into treatment, then the next best thing to do is to, and I told you this before, what we need to do is to go through something where you really do the intense, you really work hard on the issues away from the family, away from your job, away from the wife, the kids, the husband, whatever. And that is what an intensive is all about. And I highly recommend that. And so does Rob. And so I happen to know Rob, and I said, hey, Rob, will you come on the show and talk about your experience with intensives? Because clearly, you know what it's like to want to get better and to want to absolutely be the best person you can be, do the fastest recovery that you can, and really make a difference. So Rob's going to be calling here in about 8 minutes, and he's going to be talking about what it takes to be in good, solid recovery. And I'm just so thankful, you know.
So many times people in our recovery field are nervous about getting on the air. You know, they don't want to be discovered. They don't want anybody to recognize their voice. I get that. I absolutely get that. It's anonymity that they need to know that they can do good work. However, what I want to tell you is that clearly anonymity can be important, but some people are evangelists for their recovery. You heard about it last week when we talked to a woman who had a sexual addiction. I mean, she had written a book on it. She was more than happy to come out to help the lives of others. And in some ways, that really helped her. And I love that because that's what people need to do. They need to be able to decide what they're comfortable with, and then really clearly work the situation so that they can feel better about themselves. And that's what it's all about. And so I highly recommend that if you are in a place where you don't feel like you could ever, you know, go on the air or talk about your situation, that's all right. Maybe you're somebody who could write a blog. Maybe you're somebody that could go to a meeting and share your story with everybody. Everybody does it differently. There's no right or wrong there. Yes, I'm Carol the Coach, and I'm here to tell you that some people are further along in their recovery. Some people are introverts. Some people are extroverts. Some people are private, and some people, well, I got to tell you, some people just aren't quite sure how comfortable they would be outing themselves until they get enough confidence in their recovery to feel good about who they are. And that is very clearly Rob. He's going to tell us a little bit about his story and why he went into an intensive program through Gentle Path. It was a sexual recovery intensive for men who wanted to get healthy, and it was at the Meadows through Gentle Path. And he's an inspiration, and that's why I'm so excited for him to be talking about it. Now, I have to tell you that with this illness, there is a propensity to not be honest, to lie to yourself, to lie by omission, to create little white lies, and that is part of what you're actually fighting when you get into recovery. You know, that's the old behavior that is so hard to break. And so I have to say that when you can really work online and you can be rigorously honest, wow, there's nothing better. And that is what I'm so proud of with my clients. They were unequivocally on creating a life that they can be proud of. And if you're listening to this show and you know you're a sex addict or believe that you're a sex addict, it can be very difficult to take the leap of faith and trust that rigorous honesty is what's going to get you where you need to be. And but it's only once that you can be honest, and you really don't lie by omission. It's not what you didn't tell somebody. It is what you did tell somebody. It is what you risked, even knowing that that person was going to be very upset. Do that, and you can have a clear conscience and a clear mind. I got to tell you, it makes all the difference in the world. And that's when your recovery catapults. And that's one of the things that a treatment program really encourages you to do. It's to get honest first and foremost with yourself, and then, of course, with other people, whether it's the group or whether it's your peers or whether it's 12-step or whether it's your partner. And I know that that can be terribly, terribly difficult. And at the same time, that's the dividends that get paid when you do that. Because you no longer feel guilt, shame, humiliation, or embarrassment. You can be proud of who you are, going, hey, this is what I am, this is who I am, this is what I did, and this is what I'm working on. Now, I always tell people, don't go too gung-ho. You know, I mean, I'm not encouraging you to tell your coworkers. I'm not encouraging you to tell your neighbors, because people won't necessarily understand. They won't understand what they need to know. You know, it's like, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that don't get what sexual addiction is all about. And so, wow, they really, they kind of go, how do I want to say this? They try their hardest to understand, but they go to the dark side. And oftentimes, sexual addiction isn't as dark as one would think. So I'm here to say, you know, I'm asking you to be honest with the people that you love. I'm asking you to be honest with the people that count the most. Definitely your therapist, definitely your group, definitely your 12-step. Program, and definitely your sponsor. If you're in treatment, you want to be honest with everybody there. And again, the reason you want to be honest is so that you can begin to break through denial, that we really work hard on to get you through that.
hang tight. I'll be right back with you. You're listening to Carol the Coach.
All right.
I am trying my hardest.
Good news is Rob is calling in as we speak, and I'm so excited to have him on the show. He has a lot of strength, hope, and recovery for you. So, Rob, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show.
Hi, Carol.
Are you there? Hi, how are you?
Yes, I'm doing good.
Excellent.
Doing well.
I got to tell you, I went home, and that's where I do the show, out of my home studio, and everything was down. Cable was down. Internet was down. So I'm here at work taking your call, and I am so glad you could join us tonight because you have done an incredible job of working through recovery issues, and I wanted you to share with our listening audience how you did that. So share a little bit about what it was like for you to, in actuality, find out that you were a sex addict and know that you needed some extra special help.
Sure. I didn't have anybody tell me this. I just knew I had a problem. So a therapist that one of my daughters was seeing for an unrelated incident suggested that I read a book from Patrick Carnes called Out of the Shadows.
Mm.
I read that book, and it didn't take me very long to know exactly where I was and that I was a sex addict and that I did need help. Now, what I did was read that book a couple of times through and looked in the back to find resources, and that's what linked me to the Meadows. And so I called out there, and with the good fortune, someone canceled, and I got in fairly quickly and fairly early in my recovery. And so I did a one-week intensive men's recovery workshop at the Meadows in Wickenburg, Arizona.
And were you afraid to go? And were you no? Were you afraid to spend the money?
Okay,
so tell me, how did you get past those barriers?
Yeah, the money, I just had to spend some money that I had, you know. And I looked at it this way, and it was kind of explained to me. The amount of money it was costing me in my addiction, as well as the amount of money it would have cost to lose my marriage, and possibly more dangerous health issues pales in comparison to what it costs to go out there.
Okay, so you looked
at
the total picture.
Yeah. The overall picture was, I felt, after reading the book and seeing the stories, I felt that I was in dire need, that I had to have help or I wasn't going to survive much longer.
So then,
so
Rob,
I've seen it as a crisis
situation.
Your
family? Yeah, how'd you tell your family?
Well, my wife knew, because she's the one. As an addict, I did not out myself. I hid it as best I could. And there was some divine intervention that allowed my wife to find out. And when I told her that I needed, she asked if I needed help. I said yes, I did need help. And at that point in time, I had to tell my parents. I believe she actually told her parents, and I told them that I had to have help, and they were supportive of me for what I needed to do. Fortunately for me, I could take a week's vacation, and I did. That's why I did the 5-day intensive workshop.
And so, Rob, like, what was the workshop like? What were some of the things that you did that you felt really catapulted your recovery?
Okay, well, I went out there and I was really sick. I was going through withdrawals that week, because this addiction is very powerful. And I showed up Monday morning not knowing anything. I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect. But the first thing I noticed when I got to the Meadows, it's in a beautiful ranch in Arizona, and it's just the tranquility of the place hit me right off the bat. And I went early and had breakfast. Each day that you're there, we did activities from 8 to 9 in the morning to about 4:30 in the evening. We're with a certified therapist. That time, they served breakfast, they served lunch, and they served dinner after 4:30, if you wish to stay, which I did. And then they tried to schedule evening activities for the men that was in the group. They really encouraged us to hang out together during the week. That kind of fostered a camaraderie among us. It let us get to know each other better, and we were much more open with each other during the therapy sessions during the day because of that. We also attended two SA. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and you know, you said I was really sick and I was going through withdrawals. So I realized that as I was asking you what was the program like, I probably should have asked you to share just a little bit about your addiction. Of course, we don't want you to go into too many details because we don't want to trigger anybody, but could you share a little bit about how your addiction started and how out of control had it become?
Yeah, so I've been married for 23 years. I started with masturbation when I was a teenager. I never controlled that. I was looking at online pornography throughout my entire marriage, and my addiction progressed to the point of infidelity and me hiring prostitutes. That's kind of in a nutshell where I was. None of this was known by anybody. I held a completely separate life and did not have anybody who understood any of this. So when it all came out, I was scared to death. Because I had not ever been, I've never controlled the masturbation and I never controlled the pornography, that's the withdrawals I was really having difficulty with when I was at the Meadows. But one thing they did do right off the bat, the first day, we had to sign an abstinence agreement that we were not going to do any of those behaviors. Now, I know in SAA, some people define their own bottom line behaviors, but while you're in their care at the Meadows, they really try to set you up for success, so they really encourage you to put all of that stuff in your abstinence list, which I did. But I think that was the necessary part of it, and I'm glad I did it.
Absolutely. And your behaviors had gotten so out of control that you had frequented about how many prostitutes in your lifetime of sexual addiction?
About 40, right around 38 or so. Throughout my addiction, and it was, in public places as well, so.
Okay, so this was not cheating with women at work or in your neighborhood. This was spending money on women through strip clubs and that prostituted themselves, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. As always, it was with strip clubs and with strippers.
Got it. Okay. So now, you said that when you went to the Meadows, that they made some decisions for you. And one of the decisions, how many 12-step groups did they want you to go to?
We attended two while we were out there. They don't, at the end of the week, we signed a contract for what we were going to continue to do. They encourage you to sign up for as many as you can, but they don't make you sign them. But while we were out there, we attended two. We attended one in the small town that we were at, and then we attended another one that was at Gentlepath, which is a 45-day inpatient facility. And we went in as their guests for their meeting.
And how did you end up feeling at the beginning of treatment on Wednesday, which was hump day, and by Friday?
Okay, well, at the beginning of treatment, I was suggested to have minimal contact with my family. That was very hard because along with my addiction was some codependency. And it was difficult, but for me to really start to recover, I had to focus on what caused me to seek recovery, and that was me. I was responsible for my addiction, and therefore to focus on my addiction, I needed to be able to search deep within myself. So I was scared also at the beginning. We created timelines, which is we kind of did a family of origins, covered some significant events, and a brief history of our addiction, similar to what I shared tonight. And that those timelines are kind of a precursor to a first step for those that understand the 12-step programs. It's kind of an outline for it. At the beginning, we found out there were certain boundaries that I immediately had to establish to gain sobriety. And the sobriety was set forth by the boundaries that we had to put upon ourselves. That was the abstinence contract and so forth. And that sobriety led to mental clarity eventually. And that mental clarity is what really helps you start recovering. I learned that my addiction was fostered by other addictions. I learned that it was a sickness. I learned that its roots were tapped into my shame and my feelings of unworthiness. I learned that the shame could give an addict a sense of entitlement. I learned that we needed to stop beating ourselves up over and over again. We were told we were in recovery now, so be gentle and establish sobriety. Amends will come later. You can't truly make amends if you aren't sober. So our first priority there was establish sobriety.
And Rob, can I ask
yeah.
you, because you said you realized you had some extra addictions. So what did you find out about yourself in terms of additional addictions?
Well, we were warned out there, and I didn't quite totally understand it then, but I've learned more since. But we were, she shared with us that alcoholism was a problem with me when I was younger, as was workaholism. And we were warned that we do not want to just get sober in this addiction and just pass it off into another addiction, which is what is common in what I did earlier in my life, and get sober sexually and then become an alcoholic, or get sober sexually and become a workaholic. And so we were kind of given those pitfalls to watch out for.
And so because your history, you drank heavily. Was that an issue when you went into the Meadows, or did you realize that you had a propensity to jump back and forth from, you know, addictive behaviors?
Not, it wasn't really a problem with me because I haven't drank really for a long time. You know, a beer here and there. But I haven't had a problem with alcohol for a very long time. But I did realize that in some of the other stories, which is what's powerful when you're in with a group for that long. You get to know them really well. And I got to learn through some of their stories how that was a problem, and that was something that some of them had needed to address.
Absolutely. So you feel fairly bonded at, you know, right in the middle of the week. What kinds of exercises did they have you do in terms of, did you do a sexual history timeline? Did you do any 12-step work? Did you do any recovery task exercises?
We did. We had the workbook called Facing the Shadow, which is produced by Patrick Carnes. And we also had a booklet that they made up for that workshop. And we did several things during the week. One of the things we did, we learned about the three circles, and the inner circle being your abstinence circle, things that you absolutely cannot do that is in your addiction. The middle circle being your slippery slope, the kind of behaviors that if you do these behaviors, you're getting dangerously close to slipping back into the addiction. And then the outer circle are the things that make you a healthy person and the things that you really want to focus your life on. So we did a lot of work on that. We did work on our timelines and our family history, as well as our addiction history. We also did some work on trauma. A lot of us, our addicts, come from a place of trauma in our earlier lives. And so we talked a lot on what trauma is, how to deal with trauma, and kind of give us a roadmap for things that we needed to look at when we got back from the workshop.
Okay. And so I think there was a part of you that was afraid to leave. I mean, you just really had a safe place to get to know yourself.
Yeah, I went every day. I went early for the early breakfast, which not everybody did. And there, sometimes I'd be alone there just with the kitchen, and I could go out and sit and watch the sun come up over the desert, and I journaled because I like to journal, and just the tranquility of the place, and it just made me feel like it was a place for healing the soul. I just really got that out of there, and I really appreciated that. And coming back to the so-called real world, it did make me nervous and how I was going to handle things. And it's a lot. It was really good to be someplace like that where you didn't have to get the kids to school. You didn't have to feed the dog. You didn't have to mow your grass if it's the summertime. You know, you didn't have to keep up your vehicles. You didn't have any of that other stuff that causes stress in your life, and you could really just focus on yourself and starting to heal.
Well, that totally makes sense, as well as what I know to be true is that not only did you not have the stress, but if you tend to be codependent, it's a great way to stop focusing on yourself if you think of somebody else. So by having nothing else to do but focus on you, you could get to some of the roots of the problems and really your feelings.
Yeah, I did, and it was difficult. One of the things out there is I haven't ever looked as deep into myself with complete honesty as I did there. The honesty part for me was the most effective part. I'd always looked at myself and my own needs, but this time I had to be brutally honest. I felt I could be honest because everybody there was as troubled as me, and we all just wanted to get better. The more we opened up to each other, the more comfortable I felt to be honest.
Yeah, that's an integral part of treatment. You know, it's so interesting that you started this whole journey by reading a book, looking in the back of the book, from out of the shadows, finding out the treatment centers they recommended, and, of course, the Meadows and Gentle Path, which are sister treatment centers. You know, the Meadows is the big umbrella that treats all sorts of addictions, and then Gentle Path specifically treats sexual addiction. You know, it's one of the finest facilities and programs in the world. Do you think you knew that when you picked the Meadows?
I had no idea. I had no idea what was available or where to go. I looked in the back of the book, and I looked online, and it got some good reviews, and that was my first go-around, and I was just, I needed to do something. I didn't know what other programs there were. I completely, really the book sold me, because I completely felt that the book spoke to me. It really explained a lot to me, and I just wanted to stay in that realm of things. You know, I felt to myself, if the person that wrote this book has a treatment facility, that's where I want to go. And I will have to say, it does have other addictions there. It has, and so the food that they cook there is healthy for you, and it's really good. It's good food, and it's healthy, and I really have to applaud their staff for that, because they don't want to, they have a overeaters section there, so they're very careful of what they feed people while they're there, and I appreciated that.
Okay, so now tell us, what was it like on Friday? You know, what did you do to kind of graduate, and what kind of recommendations did they make?
Okay. For me, I was scared to death at the beginning of the process that at the end of the week they would recommend the 45-day treatment center, that I really didn't know whether I could swing from work. I did not get that recommendation, thankfully. They sometimes do recommend a deeper treatment center for someone if they feel that is really necessary for that person. But they, I don't know exactly what they told you, but apparently they called you and told you, yeah, Ross is out here and he's coming your way. But they recommend to us to get a certified sex therapist, and they have several recommendations out there for many places in the country. They know a lot of the people that throughout the country that treat this, and they're good resources for you. If you, while you're out there, you can ask them for that. And then we kind of, everybody, we already have numbers and everything, and we kind of see each other off, and it's kind of like, well, till I see you again. We're really close. We're really tight. And I've already returned to Arizona and met up with one of my buddies in Phoenix. We had coffee, and it was like seeing someone I've known for 20 years. So it was really good to get back in touch.
Well, that is fantastic. So then when you got home, how were you received? Because, you know, integrating back into the family can be very tough.
I was received well. I have to give everybody back home credit for, I think a lot of people were scared for me for a long time. I think you don't have this disease in a vacuum. It affects everybody around you. And everybody around me knew that I was dangerously in trouble. And the fact that I went out and got treatment and I came back, everybody was really happy to see me doing better. It's not always a pretty thing. I wasn't in good shape when I was coming back from the Meadows. You can be really, and that's something to keep in mind, you can be in a really tough place when you do a week of intensive therapy like that. And you really need to have some good support somewhere, some other people to talk to. Fortunately for me, I found some good people in SAA that I was able to talk to and work through some things with. And I think that's kind of important because it's emotionally exhausting when you work on yourself for that long. But as far as family and so forth, they welcomed me back, but they didn't really have a whole lot. They just didn't know how to approach it, I guess you would say. And they were very helpful for anything that I needed. But what I really needed to feel better was the fellowship that I got involved with, because they'd been through those trenches like I had, and they said, you're going to be okay, you're going to get through this, you're going to be all right.
You know, it's interesting because, of course, family is going to be skeptical. They're hurt. They're still in shock. They don't know whether to trust. I mean, they've spent years and years and years watching the addict lie, and now it's scary to think, oh, my goodness, he could really be different.
Yeah, it is, and it's also the unknown. You know, unfortunately for them, they didn't know what to expect when I came back. This isn't like alcoholism, where, you know, people have known alcoholics and they know how to deal with that. You just don't drink around them, and, you know, you just don't. There's things you just don't do. But this kind of an addiction, it's difficult for people to wrap their head around how you help somebody stay sober in this, especially when we have a culture that is so open sexually and puts so much right in front of your face and all the time.
Yeah, so what kind of tips or skills were you given to move away from that culture that, you know, is so sexualized?
Yeah, so the first day I was out there, one of the first tools that they give us, which was really helpful, is to get practical tools. And one of the first tools they give us was the 3-second rule, that if we were somewhere and we see something that is maybe inappropriate or appropriate but triggering, then we first thing we do is we look away. The second thing we do is we think of something different that's non-sexual. And the third thing we do is we let it go. We forget about it. So that 3-second rule we had to practice while we were out there, and we talked to each other about it if we seen anything and how to do it. So we started practicing that on the first day as a practical tool to start keeping ourselves safe.
And let me ask you, what did you do the first, you know, here you were, you went through this intensive for 5 days. What did you do for the very first 5 days that you were home?
I read. When I got home, and, you know, I'm going to say what I think I did, and I could be corrected in the future, because I was kind of numb when I came home. I was really scared to death. I had some issues in the airport while I was coming home. I had some issues with behavioral issues as far as I was still doing things I didn't even know I was doing. Apparently, I was looking at women when I didn't even know I was. I was kind of a little bit reacting to the to my spouse, and how she was. I was letting that affect me, and some of the codependency stuff was kind of coming up, and so I just really kind of stayed focused on myself and reading and trying to just, as they we called it out there, was white knuckling it, just taking every day, a day at a time, and staying sober. The first week I was back, I found two SAA meetings to go to, which is what the contract I signed to. So I got phone numbers the first week. I asked for a temporary sponsor the first week and called him, and I was just threw myself into my program. I wanted to do my first step that first week I was back, and I had to continually, people were telling me, slow down, take it easy. You're not ready for that yet. And they were absolutely correct. But I was just willing to do anything I needed to do to get better.
Yeah, and you know, that is so true, that you were eager to get healthier, and yet going slow is probably one of the best things you can do. So I can't remember if I saw you in that first week after you came home, but I know it was fairly shortly afterwards. And I remember you wanted to include the family and your wife as soon as you could. You were ready to just be a clean individual.
Yeah, I was, and I didn't. I did see you the first week I was back, and I was ready to, I was sober now. I was better. But it doesn't quite work that way. And I was calling the guys from out there that first week a lot, and we talked back and forth quite a bit that first week. So we were support for each other for that first week back. And we still are today, but not as much as we were that first week.
Well, I think one of the beautiful things is certainly we've had people, mutual clients, and obviously your cohort, your colleague, who moved away, and you were able to hook him up with one of your peers from the Meadows, and so he could move to a new area and meet somebody that could help him through that recovery process. And that was certainly helping him to get healthy.
I'm glad it's helping him. But yeah, that's the neat thing about it. I was fortunate that someone was with me out there, lived close enough, that in one of our cohorts here moved to his city, they were able to hook up. And they're about the same age, and so, you know, it all works out really well, and not that age really matters, but just the fact that they're two guys that know each other now, and they know where the kind of where the roots come from. It kind of feels good to be able to connect them like that. And when this guy moved from our city to another one, he wasn't all by himself.
Yeah. So, what are you working on now? Tell me some of the things that you're doing, because that was in what month?
That was in November.
Okay, so it's been about 6 months. And how have you changed? What are you working on?
I feel like I've changed tremendously. I'm working on trying to show empathy. The reason that they don't want you to try to do amends too soon is because you really, when you're white knuckling and when you're really early in recovery, you really can't grasp the gravity of the destruction that you've left behind you. And I'm coming to grips with that. I'm working on being a person that's empathetic to people. I'm also working on being present when I'm with people. Part of my addiction that's really bad was just I was checked out most of the time. And now I'm learning the skill set of how to be present with someone when I'm actually with them.
Yeah, and how would you say things are with your wife and your family?
Well, I have two teenage daughters and a 20-year-old, and having three girls and having this addiction is very challenging. You definitely do not want them to ever have to go through anything like this, as well as my spouse. It happened. And so now I'm trying to come to grips with how this addiction has affected them as they grew up. And we're talking through that. They're great, great, great people. And they've got the biggest hearts in the world. And they're very forgiving. But we're working on trying to, mend those relationships into better, more fulfilling relationships. With my wife, she went through extreme trauma. What I did in my addiction has left her traumatized the way a woman should never have to be. And so there's a lot of healing that has to happen with her within herself. She's finding her own voice. I'm really proud of how well she's found her own voice and how she's becoming her own person. And we're really starting to work on our coupleship, on how I need to treat her, how we can be together and be a support for each other, instead of triggering each other in ways that makes our relationship difficult. And that's a process that is ongoing right now.
Okay, and if you were going to give some advice to our listeners, because we have addicts out there, we have people that are wondering if they have addictions, and of course we have the partners. What advice would you give them, knowing that you're fairly new in recovery, but that you've worked super hard to make it your own?
My advice is to find you a really good sponsor if you're an addict that has some good clean time and can help you navigate the waters that you need to get through and can help you with the empathy. My advice, if you're wondering if you're an addict, is read some of the stories, read some of the books like Out of the Shadows, and take some self-tests. But my advice to them is, if you're doing things that you really are against your character and nature, but you don't know why you're doing them, you really need to explore whether or not you have an addiction. In my case, what I did was so out of what I believe in. My addiction was contrary to the kind of person I wanted to be. And if that's the case with you, please look at the literature. Advice to partners is, I'm sorry. I guess I should say thank you to the partners, because every partner that I talk to helps me. It helps me understand what their side of the addiction is, and that helps me know how I can better serve my life.
Now, you know, here in Indiana, we have a couple of workshops that actually occur in the spring and the fall, and they're put on by SAA. Have you been to one of those yet?
Yes, I did go to the spring workshop for SAA. It was an all-day workshop. I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of strength and hope that was shared at that workshop. There was both addicts and partners there. So we got to hear lessons from both sides, which was very helpful. And I made some friends and strengthened some friendships I already had. And I thought it was a wonderful day, and looking forward to the fall one.
Well, Rob, I got to tell you, you are an inspiration because you have taken this so seriously. And in doing so, you have moved your progress exponentially. You have just been, you've worked so hard. You've made such a difference. You know, one of the things that I can say is that it certainly doesn't guarantee you keep your job or you keep your marriage or it's not an end-all, be-all for absolute success in your life, but it is an end-all, be-all for liking yourself, knowing that you're doing the right thing, and finding purpose and passion. And wouldn't you say that you are really finding some purpose and passion in your life right now?
I really am. I know they say sometimes these steps aren't linear, and I know some of the stuff I feel in my heart is 12-step stuff, but I feel it. I feel, you know, that I'm here for a reason. And one of the things I think that I needed was I needed to be around guys more than just a couple of hours a week. And I think that's one of the things that intensive did. We needed time together to bond so we could share a deeper, more personal fears and experiences. And to me, I just feel like that's what I would like to do is, you know, share that with other people that might be in the same situation I was. Because I really felt like if I didn't get recovery, I wasn't gonna make it very far. Not just loss of job, but loss of life as well.
Yeah, because you've heard a lot of stories where people have lost their job and they have lost their family and they have lost their house and they've just been through a lot. And you've got a lot to be thankful for, huh?
Yeah, I do. I'm grateful every day for a number of things. I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for not being arrested. I'm grateful for not having disease. I was, you know, I went and got tested. I'm clean. I mean, I was faithful, or I'm thankful for a lot. I'm thankful for the bond I have with the men in SAA. I'm thankful that I feel like I have a purpose now that's bigger than just earning a paycheck. I think we kind of get, some of us get into this mode where we're going to work and paying the bills, and we just think there's got to be more than this. I would have never guessed that the more was this, but it is. And I'm going to try to do what I can to help other people.
Well, thank you so much for your support of other recovering addicts. Thanks for coming on the show. And I just know good things are going to happen for you. It won't necessarily be easy, but when you work it, it works, and you certainly are working it. So thanks again for being on the show.
All right, thank you.
All right, you have a great day.
You too.
Okay, so I was talking with Rob, and he is an amazing recovering addict who went through an intensive program at the Meadows and really felt like that made all the difference in the world. And I wanted him to come on and talk about that. There are plenty of good intensives all over the country. The Meadows and their sexual recovery workshop intensive happens to be one of the finest. So we have to end for tonight. Thanks for putting up with that long intro. That's because I was driving to the office. I tell you what, I work diligently to be able to be here for you and to provide good programming. And I knew I didn't want to let Rob down.
he's amazing, and I wanted him to have a chance to share his hope, strength, and recovery. So we'll see you next week, and I just am so thankful that you listen to the show. And as we say at all times, there will always be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. I will see you next week, and have a great one.